Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
These days, there's little as coveted as internet fame. People's lives can change overnight if they pop off on TikTok, an app that skyrocketed during COVID lockdowns and one that revolutionized how and what we share online. But this thirst for virality and the need to share and connect online obviously existed way before TikTok. Social media has given us the ability to connect with anyone from anywhere. All they need is an internet connection. Unsurprisingly, the internet has become a safe space for the socially anxious and for those who have never connected to mainstream culture. It's the one place where the outsider thrives. Bianca Devins was one of these outsiders. She felt different her whole life. She stuck out at school, none of her peers shared her interest in anime, and living in the small town of Utica, upstate New York, made her feel isolated and lonely. She, like many other teens, found connection and community online. However, this world would soon turn on her. It would be where she would meet her killer and become victim to a murder that ultimately became viral content and sparked law reform on what can and cannot be shared online. This is the tragic story of the murder of 17-year-old Bianca Devins. Goth Sun, Bitch Moon, Edgelord Rising is how Bianca Devins described herself on one of her Instagram accounts called OxyContin. This was one of three Instagram accounts that she had. No three were the exact same, but not radically different either. Instead, they showed the shifting identities of a teenage girl. OxyContin showed a bruised-kneed teen girl who cruised around in her truck, smoking cigarettes, and had a penchant for darkness. XD, an account that now has over 130,000 followers, but at the time had about 2,000, has a bio that reads, "Fake Internet Girl." Here Bianca posted a curated e-girl style, selfie edits, photo dumps and lo-fi memes, all captioned ironically with references to internet subcultures usually found on forums like Reddit and 4chan. Her eyes rolling backward, her hair bleached, pink and maybe black. Then there's another side to Bianca. Her profile, BGTFO, shows her more wholesome side. Here we see pictures of a smiling Bianca with her family. One post from Mother's Day reads, "When I was at my worst, you were here for me. Even if not physically, you called me every day. You tried to see me as much as you could. A lot of other kids didn't have that. They always told me how lucky I was to have you, and I didn't see that myself. But I've learned so much. And I appreciate you now more than I ever have." And Bianca had many days where she was at her worst. She had a tough time as a teenager growing up in Utica, a town with a population of about 65,000 people in upstate New York that had seen better days. It was part of what was known as the Rust Belt of America and suffered a huge economic downturn along with many other cities that relied on steel industries and have yet to recover from a huge industry recession in the mid-20th century. And this was not a sleepy town. Utica has a pretty high crime rate, 71% higher than the national average, and mostly gun-related crimes. It's a pretty gloomy and derelict place, and somewhere that I can imagine was not all too exciting for a teenage girl to grow up in, especially one who always felt a little different. On her Tumblr account, Bianca lists her interests: video games like Persona 5, Angels of Death, and Corpse Party. She loved anime and manga, an anime called Love, Chunbyo and Other Delusions, which is about a young teen with delusions of grandeur and who desperately wants to stand out. She likes astrology too, cosplaying with friends, and webcore, a style influenced by the early 2000s internet. Think lo-fi GIFs, pixelated visuals, and Windows Vista. But despite being somewhat of an outsider, Bianca didn't have dreams of moving to a big city anytime soon. At the time of her death, she was preparing for college. She was to attend nearby Mohawk Valley Community College, where she would major in psychology. Bianca was born on October 2nd, 2001 to Kim Devins. Kim was only 17 when she fell pregnant with Bianca, the age that Bianca would later lose her life. Kim grew up in Utica and began dating Bianca's dad, Mike, just a few months beforehand. Within 2 years, the couple had two babies. Bianca's little sister, Olivia, arrived in 2003. But all was not ideal in the Devins household. Mike was a chaotic and at times abusive person. In 2010, Bianca's parents split up for the first time, but they had been fighting for years. Utica police say Kim filed multiple domestic incident complaints. Bianca was a child who always knew right from wrong, and as she grew older and called out her dad's behaviour, she began to bear the brunt of his anger. When he left for good in 2015, Bianca was relieved to not have his anger around her anymore, but she also felt like all teenage girls can, abandoned and unloved by the one man who should be there for her and her mom and her sister. Despite his erratic behaviour, Kim described Mike as a pretty good dad, but one that when he left, he pretty much dropped all contact with her. It was around this time that Bianca started to struggle with her mental health. Puberty mixed with the splitting of her family and abandonment she felt from her father caught up in her. She grew apathetic and lonely. Kim tried to help her daughter, but she later recalled how difficult it was to navigate the mental health care system. Nobody seemed to be able to help a teenage girl. At this time, she was in middle school and her peers would describe her as a loner. She connected with some kids who shared her love of anime or drawing, but essentially she was a bit of an outcast. She soon found community in the various online forums and social media platforms that were home to people just like her. Bianca changed to a public school when she was 15, where she stuck out even more. By this time, she was 5'10", she was thin, and she loved experimenting with her hair colour and her fashion. In New York City, she would have been a bit of an it girl, but in upstate New York, which was pretty suburban and pretty mainstream, she was considered one of the weirdos. She did have some friends, though. She even had a boyfriend in her freshman year in high school, a guy called Derek Ward. Her friends would all describe her as selfless and a great listener. Derek would later say she was the best therapist he ever had. Other kids loved Bianca for her eccentricities. She was known to turn up to school with new hair pretty regularly. One Instagram highlight on her XD profile catalogues one of these many nights where Bianca decided to go wild with peroxide and pink hair dye. Bianca's friends would later say that she had a tendency to lie or elaborate about minor details of her life. One was that she was Jewish. Another time she told some kids she was on the autism spectrum. And according to an ex-boyfriend, she claimed both Cuban and Asian descent. None of these are true. She was also known to be totally obsessed with a person like Derek, but then go cold on them instantly. When her and Derek eventually broke up on her initiation, she completely ghosted him and their mutual friends, and she didn't go to school for weeks. Bianca was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder officially in 2018, after a period of horrific mental health, which saw Bianca unable to leave her home due to her low self-image and mood swings. Borderline personality disorder is an often misunderstood cluster B personality disorder. Even I have misunderstood it in the past. BPD is characterized by emotional instability, negative self-image, impulsive behavior, and fear of abandonment. Nearly 75% of people diagnosed with BPD are women, But research suggests that men may equally be affected with it, but are commonly misdiagnosed with PTSD or depression. BPD includes a pattern of unstable, intense relationships, as well as impulsiveness. People who have BPD may suffer with an unstable sense of self and inconsistencies in belief and behaviours. Bianca seemed to have suffered with some of these issues, and it can be seen in her shifting self-perception and various identities that she liked to show online too. In 2018, Bianca was having regular panic attacks, so finding solace and community online was a welcome respite from her day-to-day. And Bianca became expert in crafting various identities that appealed to the communities she was speaking to. At their core, though, all of these personas were Bianca. Despite being performative in some degrees, as we all are online really, deep down, they all had elements of Bianca. And her audience connected to a teenage girl who was depressed, lonely, isolated, sweet, shy, and very pretty. One place Bianca would find popularity was on 4chan. Now, I've spoken about 4chan before. You can go back to episode 1 of last season for some insight over there. But if you've never heard of it before, it's basically a bit of a more unhinged and wild, wild west version of Reddit. 4chan began as an image sharing forum specifically for fans of anime and manga, but in recent years it has evolved into one of the last places online where you can truly say and post whatever you want without consequence. It's completely anonymous, full of extremists, and not for the faint-hearted. Bianca loved it. It should be noted that not all users of 4chan are political extremists or white nationalists, but the ideology does leak onto lots of boards there, so there's no escaping it completely. Bianca's favourite board was Or9K, a board dedicated to posting original content, but in actuality it's a place for outsiders to meet and chat. It's a lot of doom and gloom, a lot of depressed people talking about how depressed they are, and it's mostly men. Women who post here are known to garner a following pretty fast, as the forum is full of incels, simps, and orbiters. An incel is someone who is involuntary celibate. A simp is someone who gives OTT attention and sympathy to another person online, usually parasocially. And an orbiter is someone who routinely watches everything you post online, knows everything about you, but doesn't really engage with you. Most of the girls who go viral and garner a following on 4chan are pretty young, mid-teens typically, just like Bianca. They're drawn to 4chan because they feel like an outsider, they might be interested in anime, and they spend a lot of time online and probably like the attention they get on there. This isn't a judgment on my behalf, by the way, as someone who was once a teenage girl. I totally sympathise with how getting a little attention from the opposite sex can boost your confidence. The problem lies with those giving it, especially when they're old enough to know that the person they have a parasocial relationship with is underage. And orbiters on 4chan exist on all extremes. They are typically men in their 20s and they will shower these young e-girls with attention. They'll send them money, sometimes drugs and gifts, all to encourage them to keep posting. A lot of the time they will also be soliciting revealing pictures and nudes. As is the case with almost all parasocial relationships, these guys have an ideal version of the girl built up in their head. And when an e-girl missteps outside of these parameters, things get toxic very quickly. If an e-girl disappoints or pisses off an orbiter, they risk doxing, revenge porn, and even IRL threats. Bianca was known to push these boundaries often, and she got herself into some less than desirable situations. She met one guy on the forum who she actually began to date. He was 18, she was 15, he lived on Long Island, and in August 2017, Bianca ran away to be with him. His name was Rob, and Bianca's mother tracked her down with her phone activity, enlisting the help of a private investigator to find her. When Bianca found out that the police were looking for her, she tried to run out in front of a car, which led to her being institutionalized at a mental health facility at Nassau County for 5 days. Kim did not like Rob. She felt he was a bad influence on Bianca. He was depressed and suffered with bipolar disorder, which she felt only encouraged Bianca's low mood. Bianca's friends said he would try stalk her, try hack into her social accounts, and that they had a very toxic relationship. This would come to a head when they broke up. Rob was enraged when Bianca dumped him, and in retaliation, he sent sexually explicit content of him and Bianca on Discord, which is an instant messaging service. Now, seeing that Bianca was 15 at the time, this technically was child pornography. Bianca showed her mum, and they reported Rob to the police. Rob threatened suicide. Bianca refused to cooperate with the investigation. It was all a bit of a mess. Despite this mess, they stayed in contact. Bianca ran away to him three more times between 2017 and 2018. Bianca spent more and more time in a mental health facility in 2018 after expressing suicidal ideation to her therapist. She actually liked it here. She had friends and she loved the visits from family when they'd bring pizza. When she came home, she was fit with an ankle bracelet. Because of her history of running away, they had to keep an eye on her. She would violate this by cutting it off and running away again, and she would go back into another facility in October that year. It was here, in this facility, where she met a therapist she really connected with and who helped her. Finally, she started a type of CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy aiming at reducing suicidal ideation and self-destructive behaviors. Around this time, she wrote that heartfelt Instagram post dedicated to her mother and her stepmother and her half-siblings. Bianca, by all accounts at this point, finally seemed to be doing better.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Brandon Clark was 21 when he met Bianca on social media. He, like Bianca, was a fan of anime, and he had a complicated family life, the effects of which he struggled with. He was from Syracuse, New York, about an hour from Bianca, and grew up in an unstable household. His father was a very violent man who, when Brandon was just 12 years old, held his mother hostage at knife point in their family home. His father would go to prison after this, and Brandon was placed in foster care, and according to him, he would never really be the same. When Brandon was a teen, he began showing some worrying behavior. He was obsessive, often spending hours online researching his latest obsession. His childhood best friend found out that his activity online was much worse than he thought, though. He had become obsessed with the Japanese manga-style genre that hypersexualized prepubescent girls called loli. He even began texting a 12-year-old girl. But Bianca, as far as we're aware, knew none of this. She did know about his rough childhood, though. In fact, they bonded over the instability and loneliness they both felt as young teens. Bianca was known to be a good listener. She was empathetic. And at this point in her life, she was preparing to start a career in mental health services after studying psychology. She really wanted to help other teenagers who felt like she had in 2018. Kim, Bianca's mother, as we remember, did not like Bianca's ex-boyfriend. Bianca had a habit for going for people who were dangerous, fragile, possessive, and scary to Kim. But she felt that Brandon was different. Brandon and Bianca's relationship was complicated. He would call himself her boyfriend, but when asked, Bianca would outright deny that they were dating. They definitely had a closer relationship than Bianca had with most of her orbiters, as they're known, especially since their friendship crossed over into IRL territory. But it remains unknown and frankly unimportant whether they were ever intimate. I just make the distinction because sometimes in reporting of this case, it's told as if they were a couple or that they dated at one point. Now, whether their friendship was platonic, that's a different story. Since the murder, Brandon has admitted that he was in love with Bianca. They met when he followed her on Instagram, and he was a member of her Discord server, filled with other orbiters, where he would mostly point about pretty macabre stuff like murder suicides. Kim Devins had a feeling that Brandon wanted more from the friendship, and she spoke to Bianca about this, but Bianca didn't seem too worried. Some of Bianca's friends would later claim that Brandon would give Bianca drugs and use this as a ploy to get her to hang out with him. Some other friends claim that he took advantage of her in these states, but that is unconfirmed. Despite all of this, Bianca and Brandon made a date to go see one of Bianca's favourite artists, Nicole Dollenganger, live in Queens, New York City. Bianca, as we covered, did not have the best track record with returning home, so she asked Brandon to take her here, knowing that her mother liked Brandon for the most part and would trust him to bring her home on time. Bianca and Brandon drove 4 hours to the venue. Bianca was super excited. Dollenganger's music meant a lot to her. She sang about depression, abuse, self-harm, and the melancholia often felt by teenage girls, and emotions that we know Bianca dealt with years beforehand. She had initially put out an open invite on her Discord to the gig, eventually just going with Brandon, or so he thought. While at the concert, Bianca told Brandon that she was planning to meet up with someone else, a guy who went by the handle Oipu, who Brandon would have known from their internet world. Screen grabs of Discord DMs with a friend that police later found show Bianca gushing over this guy, saying how she felt like he was perfect and that she was in love. His real name was Alex and he lived in Jersey City. And in an ironic twist of fate, Bianca thought it would be safer to meet him while she was with Brandon, who would be there to protect her if anything went wrong. After the concert, Bianca had snuck off with Alex while Brandon left to go get rolling papers. He told them to meet them at his car, and when he came back, he saw Bianca and Alex kissing. It must have been awkward. In Discord messages from that morning, Alex said that Brandon was nasty and combative, and that Bianca had given him his first kiss. Bianca and Brandon got back into his car to make the 4-hour drive back to Utica, but Bianca would never make it home. While driving home, Bianca fell asleep in Brandon's car, and while she was KO'd, he took a picture of the road ahead and posted it to his Instagram account. He captioned it, "Here comes hell, it's redemption, right?" At 6:03 a.m., around the time that Bianca was due to make it home to her shared bedroom with her little sister, a message was posted to her Discord server. It read, "Sorry fuckers, you're going to have to find somebody else to orbit." Above the message was a picture of a young woman's body, wearing Bianca's signature winged eyeliner, covered in blood. It was clear from her face that she was no longer alive, plus the injuries to her throat were so brutal, she was very close to being decapitated. Initially, people on the server laughed it off as gore content, something that would usually be sent or posted on 4chan for shock value as a troll. But when a reverse image search didn't pull up any movies or photo shoots that it could be traced back to, people began to panic. Members questioned the original poster as to where he got the picture. He replied, "My car, dumbass. I fuck Bianca. Subscribe to PewDiePie." At 7:30 a.m., a 911 dispatcher got a call from a young man who identified himself as Brandon.
My name is Brandon. The victim is Bianca Michelle Devins. I'm going to myself.
Just stay in line with me, okay?
No, I'm not going to stay in line with you. I'm going to be dead.
What the 911 dispatcher did not know was that since 7:20 a.m., the Utica Police Department had been receiving floods of calls. They were all calling about the same girl, Bianca Michelle Devins, saying that a disturbing picture of her had been posted to social media and that they feared her life was in danger, or in fact, over. Friends of Brandon also rang in for welfare checks due to his erratic posting on social media that night. He seemed to be directing, producing, and co-starring in what appeared to be a tale of a brutal murder, and posting about it in real time. In one photo, the body of a young girl was visible, covered in blood splatter. The text over the image read, "I'm sorry, Bianca." The final of this series of gory photos was a selfie showing his own slashed neck as he lay on top of tarp covering Bianca's body. At some point, Brandon called his relatives to tell them that he'd killed his friend. He left his grandmother a voicemail.
"It's Brandon. I hope I would be able to reach you, but I guess I'm not able to. So I know this is going to come as kind of a surprise, at least to you it isn't to me. But I killed someone today. I killed my girl."
He tried to call his brother, his aunt, and a father figure. They all called 911. Sunday morning, July 14th, Kim Devins expected to wake up and chat to her eldest daughter about how her night went. Who did she meet? And how was the concert? Instead, she was woken up by the Utica police ringing her doorbell. They told her that they were there for a welfare check after they had reportedly seen some disturbing pictures of Bianca posted online. Kim noticed Bianca wasn't home. Her phone rang out. She called for family and friends to come over. She said that it was as if life was going in slow motion. Then a friend of Kim's younger daughter, Olivia, who was best of friends with Bianca, made a tortured scream from a nearby room. Someone had DM'd her pictures of Bianca, the picture of Bianca. Meanwhile, cops arrived at the scene of the crime to find Brandon Clark lying on top of a green tarp. Beside him burned a small fire. He had destroyed his laptop and hard drive. He had also spray painted the words, "May you never forget me," on the ground, as he was live streaming all of this to his Instagram followers. One of the officers asked where Bianca was. Brandon shouted, "Where the fuck do you think she is?" The officer looked around and he saw dark hair peeking out from underneath the green tarp. Sadly, the horror of this story did not end here. The pictures of Bianca's body soon went viral online. They were posted everywhere from 4chan, Tumblr, Twitter, even Instagram. Members of the family were getting sent them via DM by 4chan trolls. Kim and her family immediately reported these images to Instagram and the police, and Instagram responded that the photos either didn't violate their community guidelines or they simply added a sensitive content warning to them, blurring the photo of their daughter's corpse hadn't even been identified yet. Her family says photos remained on Instagram for a week and occasionally still pop up today. Brandon would survive his self-inflicted injuries. Police claimed he was rocking back and forth from the pain of his semi-cut throat when they found him. After receiving medical care, he was questioned by the police, who say he was very interested in what was on the news and whether the pictures of Bianca's body had been found. The hashtag RIPBianca started trending on Twitter within hours of her death. The internet did what the internet does, and Bianca's murder almost became an abstract event onto which anyone and everyone could project upon and use it to push their own agenda. Feminist groups used it to critique 4chan, incels used it to degrade women, and some martyred Brandon, as they had done Elliot Rodgers before. While 4chan is unquestionably misogynistic and in parts so toxic, Bianca liked it, and she found friends there as well as orbiters. In fact, for the introverted nerdy kid that she was, 4chan was somewhere she could find people who loved what she loved. Brandon was not an incel in the traditional sense. Police would later remark that the information from both Bianca and Clark's phones indicated that they undoubtedly had an intimate relationship, but Bianca's family deny this. Kim, Bianca's mother, was being harassed constantly by trolls and shitposters who thought it would be hilarious to send her the pictures of her dead daughter over and over and over again. Someone posted it as a comment underneath her profile photo on Facebook. Another person airdropped it to Bianca's stepmom while she was out grocery shopping. In a later interview with Huffington Post, Karina Newton, the head of public policy at Instagram, stressed that the images did violate the platform's community guidelines. and should have been immediately removed. But they weren't. And for weeks, it was impossible to look at the hashtag RIPBianca without the image showing up. Bianca's own Instagram pages blew up. Her XD account, as I said, had around 138,000 followers at the time of recording this podcast. Bianca's murder was a huge wake-up call for other e-girls on 4chan. It showed just how dangerous it could be to feed into the orbiter and orbitee relationship. These guys weren't normal, nor were the relationships being cultivated. Some of the orbiters just didn't see the women as human, but as disposable objects onto which they could project their sickest fantasies and rage. Brandon pled not guilty to second-degree murder on July 29th, 2019, but days before he was set to go to trial, he changed his plea. Through investigation, it was revealed that a few months before he killed Bianca, he researched online methods of killing someone, and in particular, he looked up information about the carotid artery, which is a main blood vessel in the neck, along with choking and hanging. He had also written a letter to a friend while in jail, bragging about the murder of Bianca, and saying that he did it because he was terrified of Bianca walking out of his life. He couldn't have her, no one could. Authorities revealed that Brandon had recorded the killing on his phone so he could watch it later. This was by his own admission. Despite what appeared to be ample evidence that this murder was planned long before the concert, the kiss or the argument that he and Bianca had, the second-degree murder charge was final. On March 16th, 2021, Brandon Lark was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison. Since the sentencing, Brandon has only spoke out once publicly in a Channel 4 production of Interview with the Killer, which aired last November 2023. Personally, the documentary didn't do anything for me. While I can see how interviewing evil can be educational and handled well when done by professionals in the field of, say, psychology, this felt strange since the interviewing was done by a DJ who described herself as someone who, quote, usually interviews rappers, but has always been fascinated by true crime. In saying that, the presenter in question, Yinka Bocchini, does a great job at pushing back against Brandon when he says some pretty outrageous things. But overall, it lacked any insight or any meaningful value to the discourse around such a violent murder. Kim Devins, Bianca's mother, received a message from the show's producer who pitched it as a documentary focusing on social media and the violence that has come from this world. And he said that it aimed to hold social media companies accountable for hosting violent content. Now, Kim declined to take part and was shocked when the show actually came out, and it was nothing like what it had been described to her. Since the murder, Kim has been busy making sure that no other family who are victim to murder will be faced with being tortured with graphic images of their loved one. She has called for an increased action to be taken by social media companies in regard to graphic content. Bianca's Law was proposed in 2020, and it suggested if passed, all social media platforms with more than $10 million of revenue and over 100,000 monthly users would be required to establish an office dedicated to identifying and removing violent content that violates the platform's moderation standards. And in January 2022, the New York State Assembly passed a version of Bianca's Law, which criminalizes posting, sharing, or publishing personal images with intent to degrade or abuse under certain circumstances. The story of Bianca Devins is horrifying. It, of course, highlights the complex nature of parasocial relationships, especially with young adults and teenagers who seek community and connection through anonymous forums like 4chan. In a world where connection, friendship, and even romance online has become second nature, dangers like this feel very far away at times, and most of the time they are. Possibly the saddest element about Bianca's story is how it is mistold so often. It was sensationalized as the murder of an internet celebrity, despite the fact that Bianca only had a couple thousand followers. It was manipulated by multiple groups to push an agenda, and it highlighted the absolute negligence of huge tech companies that seemed to put all their effort into removing pictures of nipples, but ignore graphic gore content that re-traumatized a real victim's family for years to come. That is all that we have time for this week. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the show and leave us a review wherever you're listening. It really helps us reach more people. Next week, we're going to be diving down another rabbit hole, an Irish true crime case known as Ireland's very own staircase. And that is the murder of Mary Gough by her husband of 6 months, Colin Whelan. Until then.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.